Kaunteya, yatato yapi Kaunteya, purushasya vipaschitah,
purushasya vipaschitah,
indriyani pramatini,
indriyani pramatini,
haranti prasabham manah,
haranti prasabham manah.
Yatah hi api Kaunteya purushasya vipaschitah indriyani pramatini haranti prasabham manah. In the previous verses, Bhagavan has really been talking about how strong desires are in terms of being able to, the sense, or talking about in the sense that the sense organs can just pull away your mind. But then we said, well, the sense organs are actually, they're just reporters. But then, because of what you're seeing through the sense organs or experiencing through the sense organs, some sort of fancy takes place. So hear what he's saying now. So keeping on with that, he says, Hey Kaunteya, son of Kunti, the Bokara for Arjuna, Hey Kaunteya, Yatataha Purushasya Vipaschitaha. These three go together. So for a person, genitive singular, for a person who is Vipaschitaha, means has Viveka, has clarity of mind, is a mumukshu, is on the path to gaining this knowledge, has clarity, yatataha, and is striving. So this api, you want to actually take this api and move it over to vipaschitaha, according to Shankara. Instead of just having yataha hi api, take the api, put it over with vipaschitaha. So a person, for a person, even though they have viveka, and they know what's going on, they see the whole thing clearly. Okay? They have clarity. They know what's going on. They know about the sense organs. They know about the sense organs being pulled away. They know about raga dvesha. They know that... they even know that the source of ananda is my being is very, very clear. And they are struggling, trying. And they are making effort. Okay, so all these things. A person who has this viveka, knows the whole story, you know, and is serious, making serious effort, okay? For that person, even for that person, that vipaschitaha, that one who has that clarity, indriyani pramatini, the indriyas themselves are very strong. They're violent. They're full of force, you know? And those strong indriyas, haranti, they rob away prasabham. Prasabham means the mind with great force. They take the mind away. They carry the mind away. So, I think we've all had that experience. It's not that we're not serious, right? We're all serious. We're all vipaschits. We all have viveka. We all know this. We have this jnanam also. To whatever degree, you can't say that you don't know. You do know. But the mind, you know, the fancies of the sense organs, the things, the rasas that are dangled in front of the mind, you know, those things have not yet all been resolved. And so even though that clarity is there, and I know that myself is the source of ananda, all clear, I understand it, and I'm a serious student, still, these indriyas really means the fancies in my mind that are triggered by the indriyas. Because the indriyas, the sense organs, are just kind of roaming around taking information, and then, boop, that one, that particular, it landed on that particular object. And that object sets off this whole process, this whole fanciful process, which leads to, as we'll see in the next verse, it leads to all kinds of situations. Okay? Okay. So recognizing that even for yourself as a serious student, you find your mind being carried away, right? Which is exactly the story I was telling in the last class about the Swami Suddhabodhananda. Because that's what he found. He had so much clarity, had done so much shravana with Swamiji, and yet, you know, the mind was just going on its own journey. Something triggers it, and then it's off. Some sort of hankering or some sort of desire occurs, then raga dvesha occurs, and there's this whole kind of bouncing ball down from your sublime clarity down into the samsara once again. Okay. And so, taking that to heart, he did what is in the next verse. Okay, so let's do the next verse.
Tani sarvani samyamya
yukta asita matparaha
yukta asita matparaha vashe hi yasyendriyani
tasya prajna pratishtita
tasya prajna pratishtita
tani sarvani samyamya yuktaha asitaha matparaha vashehi yasya indriyani tasya prajna pratishtita.
Okay,
so so what Bhagavan says now, that being the case means the power of my mind and all the unconscious material, all the habitual likes and dislikes that are there in my mind. When one gains knowledge, as you're gaining knowledge and gaining clarity, this nishta, you know, this citta prajna, does not just immediately take place. Your knowledge has to become stronger and stronger and stronger to neutralize and withstand this prasabham, the strength, this power of the indriyas, or powers of the power of these fancies. That takes place over time. In fact, in the Bhagavad Gita, I think I told you this the other day, but it's so beautiful. In the Gita, they use the example of a bonfire, right? And your mind is like building it. If, say, if you built a huge bonfire ready to be lit on the beach, that bonfire has many, many pieces of wood in it. There's many, many conditions that are involved in allowing that bonfire to burn once we light it. So once the knowledge lights that bonfire, you're just lighting a corner. You know, say you have just a little match and you're lighting a corner of this huge bonfire. You have to protect that, you know. You have to shelter that and let it really catch. Because if it doesn't catch, if the flames don't catch significantly, even a little wind will come and just blow it out. It'll blow the match out before you even get the match to the bonfire. And so you have to shelter that for a while until it gains what we say like a life of its own, until your knowledge, until your clarity, until that prasada buddhi becomes more dominant as opposed to the day that you're starting it. You know, it has to have time to kind of build up that strength to where you see how rewarding and how worth it is. Just like this inner child work that we're doing, or this Pratipaksha Bhavana that we're doing, what keeps us doing it is ananda. You know, if that's just a you know, like a course in misery, you know, we're not going to keep that up. We keep doing it because of it. My ananda, my shanti, my sense of well-being, my sense of my own presence keeps growing and growing and growing and growing. That's what makes these type of things worth it, you know. Even submitting yourself to sitting for hours to really gain this knowledge, you won't do it. You won't do it without any pala. There has to be a result. There has to be a reward. Why do we make an effort? This is also a kama. The wanting to gain knowledge is a desire. I want to gain this knowledge. I want to gain self-knowledge. Because I've understood, I come to understand that self-knowledge and enlightenment are the same thing, you know. the liberation. Liberation is self-knowledge. I come to understand that. And I want liberation, because what is liberation? How is that defined? It's defined as freedom from suffering. I want my being, I want to just be me. I want to own my nature. Then clarity about what freedom from suffering means, that has to take place. And as all of that becomes clear and more clear, my commitment to knowledge becomes, to self-knowledge, becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. And then I really know what I'm doing. That vipassitta is there. I know what I'm doing. This is what I want. And I'm very clear about it. But nevertheless, my mind keeps getting pulled away, because even though I'm clear about that, I have a whole storehouse. I have a whole reservoir, you know, of raga dvesha, subtle and active. And I also have repressed or things held in the unconscious, which are also thwarted raga dveshas. They're thwarted. And some of them are so natural. I want mom and dad to love me. You don't even have the words for it, but that's what you want. I want them to love me, to think I'm the best little girl in the world or the best little boy in the world. That's what I want. And as I'm not getting that, I get more and more and more hurt. The psyche just holds it inside. And I basically have an overwhelm coming up all of the time. If I'm not loved, I'm not good enough, right? That's all thwarted raga dvesha, the things that didn't work out for me, that even though they're very, very natural, those are natural desires. They're natural to the human being. So it's not like, they're like salmon, they're like the collective desires, in the sense that every human being has that. It's part of being a human being. But then when it's thwarted, it creates some problems inside. Let alone all of the things that I wanted growing up that I didn't get, or I didn't feel I was good enough. These are all things, there are just tons of them, little ones and big ones and all kinds of ones. Those things all have to be processed. They come up, and they come up, and they come up, and they come up into your knowledge, into this vipassitta, into your clarity. They come up, and then you respond to them differently. That's what transforms them. All of these things keep coming up, but you hold on to them, you handle them differently. It transforms them. It heals them. But they still come up. One of my favorite little personal, horrible little personal stories about this. Another episode of delusion, but very disappointing. So I was in India, and I was at the course for first course, and then I actually went back. So I spent a lot of time in India, actually, and then a lot of time with Swamiji in the States. But now I was talking about the first 6 months, because my visa ran out after I traveled with traveled in India, and then my visa ran out, and I had to go home for some time just to get the visa. That was traumatic in itself, but. When I was with Swamiji, for that time I was with him in classes every day, my mind was really had a much greater degree of shanti and clarity. You know, that vipassitaha, you know, that I know what I'm doing, I know what I want, I'm understanding this knowledge, I don't want anything else. I was completely clear about that. And I had a lot of shanti, and there was very, very few, if anything in the environment at that time that was really a bother or a problem for me. You know, so my mind had a lot of equipoise and a lot of shanti, and I just felt like a jnani, you know, like I was supposed to be. And it was very nice. And so what happened is I had to go home. And when I got home, I went to where I had always been used to live. I was in Berkeley, and I'd had an apartment in Berkeley and a lot of different friends in Berkeley, and then I had my family about an hour away. And so as I got home, and I spent just a few days there with these friends and people that I knew quite well, these feelings and thoughts that I had not had for a really long time, I didn't even remember I had feelings like this or reactions like this. I had been away for them so long that But when it came, it was like, it was really shocking, you know? Because you know what? They were all just there dormant waiting for me. They were all there. They were all there. But there was nothing in the environment to trigger them because I was in a totally different environment. So now the thing is, that was a shock for me. I didn't really understand it. That's what we're talking about here, though. I didn't understand that something like that would happen. And so all of these old reactions, these old pains, these old hurts, all of these old stuff that was very familiar as they rose up, I was flabbergasted, actually, and I was really kind of, I don't know, it was a little depressing. Okay. But there was a silver lining to it that I realized that, yeah, I realize they're all coming up because they've just been dormant there. They've just been sitting there dormant because nothing was there to trigger those responses or those emotions. And so when I went back into the same situation, the same family situation, the same things came up. I realized they've just been sitting there dormant. But you know what was different? Is that all of those feelings were coming into a different buddhi, into a different person, you know? So once I got over the shock of it, you know, I realized the way that I was with these feelings was completely different. You know, I was able to process them and be with them in a way that then allowed them to drop off because they no longer had really anything to do with my value system or what I wanted. They were meaningless. But they all showed their head, you know. And so even though you may have some great deal of clarity, that's why this is exactly the whole Bhagavad Gita, in a sense, is like this, because Arjuna is saying, I realize this problem, I'm not going to fight, and he plops himself down. There's nothing for me to be gained from this world. Now, either, you know, I'll murder all of these people and then enjoy all of these enjoyments that are dripping with their blood. And so how can I do that? I don't see any way out of this situation. And then he asks Krishna to teach him, and in the meantime he sits down and says, I'm not going to fight. And Bhagavan tells him in many, many different ways through the whole Gita, he was very happy to teach him. He accepted him as a sishya, very happily, you know. And Krishna was, they were friends also, mentor, but Arjuna was very dear to Krishna. And so Krishna said, yes, I will teach you, you know. But then Arjuna wanted to go to the forest. And he said, but you have to stay here itself. Because Arjuna asked him, what is best for me? Shouldn't I go to the forest and be a sannyasi? That's what people are supposed to do when they want knowledge. That's when Krishna came and taught, as we'll see more as we get into this more, really the difference between sannyasa and karma yoga. Karma yoga, say if, for instance, I had just stayed over there. I just think about that, and then, you know, 40 years later, I come over here. I come out away from the forest, which I'd probably made a whole bunch of trouble there too, because I'd have all these some scars going on inside. And I come over here to my friends and family, see them. We're all a lot older, but up comes all these 40-year-old feelings. Feelings from 40 years ago that had just been sitting there dormant. All of these attitude, all of this kind of childish things that never got a chance to really come up into my knowledge until I was able to experience them as I was gaining knowledge. When you experience all of these things as they come up into your knowledge, it makes a huge, it's what is so transformative. And if you don't, they sit there dormant. Again, similarly, a lot of the inner child work that we do is on the same venue. It is the same idea. These problems that we have, that have been kind of stored there from childhood, they just sit there, projecting out, you know. They project out onto others, they project out onto the world. They're just abiding there because nobody has come in to get them. they will stay there in exactly the same form because your defense system doesn't know. It has no idea that it's all right to stop, to let down the guard. It will keep that guard up until there's some work. It doesn't have to be inner child work, but it has to be some work that comes into conscious relationship with that part of yourself, with that complex. And then that will come up, you know, and you can deal with it in from the standpoint of your knowledge. Or from the standpoint, if you go in as an inner friend, you're going in and giving to that part of you the thing that you had not gotten before, right? It's what you didn't get. And so, in fact, we say that those parts of you are sitting there waiting for the love and the validation that they need in order to mature, right? That's why the love we give our children is so, it's so important, because even physiologically, that certain amount of safety and love seems to be very necessary for the child to go through kind of its archetypal stages. It can't, you can actually suppress these archetypal, what we call it, natural, instinctual, and on the psychological level we call archetypal, the stages that a psyche needs to go through as it matures. It needs to have, you know, safety. It needs to have structure. It needs to have love and care, you know, not abandonment and these type of things, because then it has to become very tense and it's not allowed to grow. You have to bring out the sunshine and the water and the environment to let it prosper. And Bhagavan gave us this backup system to allow this to happen. The Bhagavad Gita also is telling, you know, now to gain this knowledge, how to make your antakarna, you know, your mind, something that can handle these fancies and all of these things that are coming up. What needs to be done? Because even a vipassacit, as you're gaining this knowledge and you have this clarity, you know, still your mind runs away from you. Or the raga dvesha seem to come out of nowhere. Think everything's fine, ooh, there it comes. All right? So then he says, what to do, you know? So Krishna says, tani sarvani samyamya. He says, so therefore, holding in your hands, learning how to hold in your hands all of these sense organs and the fancies that they trigger. Holding all of those in your hands, samyamya means having controlled them, all of those. As a yuktaha means one who has this viveka, or Shankara says samahitaha. Samahitaha means really that I'm capable of having a shantavritti. I'm capable of having a mind that enjoys shanti. I can withdraw my mind from it. So, controlling all of these sensory pursuits, being able to be a yuktaha, somebody who has control and can bring my mind back to myself, then he says, asita mataraha. Matparaha. Asita matparaha. Asita means sit. You should sit matparaha with your attention, with your focus, with your contemplation, contemplating upon me. Me is not Krishna here. Me is Bhagavan, is Ishwara. Contemplating on what you know. Spending time doing nididhyasana. Contemplating on the Atma, on the Self, which is the Self of all beings, recognizing over and over again in so many ways with your mind, using your mind in meditation to see that in fact I am the Ananda that I seek, and that I am the Self that I am is Ishwara. So now this requires a lot of knowledge. So when we're talking about contemplation, he's talking about the Muni, the Stitta Prajnaha. Right, the one who has knowledge, who has clarity, that clarity is there, but to become that stitta prajnaha, so you have any knowledge of vipassacit, you want to be that, have that stitta prajna, that firmness in knowledge. How to do that? So he said, and he'll talk much more about this in a bit, so anyway. Asita matparaha. He says, contemplate, sit and contemplate on the truth of what you see at the time of teaching, so that your mind has a chance to really be with that and to recognize it, because it's in that recognition, really, in that knowledge, that the raga dveshas, the rasa, those raga dveshas that come from all corners of the psyche and surprise you, it's only from doing that type of manana, shravana, manana, nididhyasana, sitting with my knowledge, that neutralizes those raga dveshas. The raga dveshas cannot be neutralized without recognizing myself as the ananda that is projected on them. Because if you don't know that or you don't understand that, then it's like saying, I shouldn't have any raga dveshas. But the raga dveshas, you know, my desires are for the things that I think will make me happy. And so you're telling me to just sit here without any happiness. Don't pursue your desires. You know, but the desires are the things that, if I can fulfill it, it's those things that give me ananda. So that's not going to make any sense at all, because then you're doing all of this tapas for what, for what, for what, for what? You know? You should believe that that tapas will result in ananda, you know? And so if you still believe in that the ananda exists out there for me to gain, then this whole thing about, you know, controlling your mind and all of that is really in vain, because the rasa has not gone. It can't go. That's the thing to understand. It can't go unless you've solved the problem. Unless you've found the rasa, the source of the rasa, the ananda that every raga dvesha is seeking, unless you've found that, if you've discovered it, then how can the raga dvesha go? So raga dvesha is all about your ananda. It's all about your well-being. I want this so that I can be happy. The this and the ananda are equated with each other. And so it makes no sense to think that you can control those fancies and control those desires and not be triggered as your sense organs are traveling about. Not get stuck on something. Something the sense organs are traveling about, and something shines. Something shines. And so that's where you go. That's what I want. It's because of that, what we call superimposition. So that's a natural, normal result of self-ignorance. And I don't know, Krishna doesn't know, nobody knows, how are you going to stop that? Unless you find that, you know, treasure at the end of the rainbow, which is your own being. And once that's discovered, the mind still has all of these habitual samskaras, habitual, you know, tendencies and subtle raga dveshas that have not risen up at all in the presence of me with my knowledge. That has to happen. So he says, you know, being one who's a yuktaha, that one who has viveka and is capable of a shantavritti, samahita, capable of resolving the mind, let that person contemplate on me. Mat paraha really means, may I be what is the most important. May Ishwara be what is primary for me. May that be the fundamental desire, is to know Ishwara, to gain this knowledge. Then he says, because it's vashe yasya indriyani. It's the one for whom the sense organs are under my control. Vasha means under my control. So it's the one for whom the sense organs are under control. It's for that person, prajna pratishtita. It's for that person that stitta prajna, that knowledge can be firm. Because otherwise, in spite of my knowledge, the rasas are so strong, you know. The raga dveshas are still so strong, they just carry me away. So what's the solution to that? You know, is shravana manana nididhyasana. Nididhyasana means let me sit with what I know. Let me contemplate on Bhagavan. Let me do those contemplations that are neutralizing all of these things. So then he says, what happens if you don't do that? Okay. This is a nice verse, kind of these two verses together. Let's do these two.
Jayato Vishayan Pumsaha. Sangaste Shupa Jayate. Sangat Sanjayate Kamaha. Kamat Krodho Vijayate. Krodhat bhavati sammohaha.
Sammohat smriti vibrama.
Sammohat smriti vibramaha.
Smriti bramshat buddhi nashaha.
Smriti bramshat buddhi nashaha.
Buddhi nashat pranashyati.
Buddhi nashat pranashyati.
Dhyayataha vishayan pumsaha sangaha teshu upajayate sangat sanjayate kamaha kamat krodhaha abhijayate krodhat bhavati sammohaha sammohat smriti vibramaha smriti bramshat buddhinashaha buddhinashat pranashyati. So this is what do you call it, the sequential downfall of what happens for one who is overcome by kama. Kama means desire, desire means both, includes both raga and dvesha. So what he says here, jaya, just take it step by step. First, jayataha vishyan pumsaha sangaha. He says, for pumsa, for a human being, pumsaha, genitive, jayataha, present participle, so for a person who is contemplating on sense objects, vishyan. Okay. So say something starts with a little fancy, and then I start thinking about that, like the sari, Swamiji's story on the sari. So I start thinking about that. So it just starts a little fancy, but I start thinking about it. And as I think about it, what he says, what this verse says, as I'm thinking about it, a certain attachment comes. You know, the more I think about it, the more I like it, the more I want it. I'm developing, just in my thought life, I'm developing a relationship with it, you know. You know, that's how it was for me with my farm, actually. So I was thinking about it and, you know, and then it was just naturally developing some sort of attachment to it, like it was mine. It was just, your thoughts just lead you like this, okay? So sangaha. Then, so for a person, this attachment is for somebody who is meditate, who is really thinking over and over about this vishyan, these vishyas, for them there is a sangaha, sangha, an attachment, sanjayate, is born toward them. You become attached to them as you're thinking about them. You just have to look into all your own experiences, and I can think of some of mine that's nice. The only difference for me is the farm thing only happened 2 years ago, so I had some, you know, I didn't have that raga dvesha. It was preference, but not raga dvesha. But boy, I mean, if it hadn't been of that order, it would be of this order. Okay, so because this first part definitely happened, you know. Then an attachment, you're thinking about it, and, you know, you become fond of it. This could be a person also. It starts out with, you know, you just notice that person, and it goes away, but then you notice again, then you notice more. You're thinking about them more, and then you start to develop attachment toward the person, wanting to know, wanting to get to know them, all of these type of things starts to happen. So then he says like this, from this attachment, this kind of interest, you know, sangat sanjayate kamaha. So from this sangha, this kind of attachment, kama is born, desire is born. I really want this. I think I really want this. Or in a relationship, I really like this person. I want to be with this person. So kama is born. Now at this point, so the kama is born, the desire is born, and if that desire is fulfilled, then in terms of this sequence, no problem. It stops there, the desire is fulfilled. Yay. Okay. but it doesn't last for that long because the person just becomes a person, and sometimes they make you happy and sometimes they don't, you know. But this desire is fulfilled, and so it's such a happy thing. But now, the desire is not always fulfilled, whether it be a person or something that you want to acquire or something that you want to do. You have a strong desire, you want it, you've gone through this, first just noticing and then thinking about it more and more and then developing, you know, the attachment and then developing the desire. So you've already a few steps in. And then it doesn't fulfill. So then when he says, when the kama does not fulfill, then kamat krodha abhijayate. Then from that kama, krodha is born. Krodha is anger. It's anger. Your desire is being thwarted. And so that desire transforms into anger. You know? Swamiji gave kind of a benign example of this. Say, for instance, you're in charge of something and you're making some plans for an event that you're going to be putting on and you're delegating the duties that need to be fulfilled in order for the event to run smoothly. And so you've delegated to all of the people that are part of this event planning situation. You've delegated all, everything's in order. And one person at the midnight hour totally drops the ball. In other words, the things that they were supposed to have taken care of, they did not. Now say that you had an investment in that event going well, you know. Then that person can be the cause of great irritation, depending on what the level of kama was in reference to the event. If it was a preference, then it's kind of like, oh well, let's see what we can do. But to the degree that you're invested, that dropping the ball can be really an irritation. It can lead to krodha. So you can see, think of your own instances where an unfulfilled desire leads to anger. It can even, I think I like the example that Swamiji gave because it's very benign, but it is dealing with the expectations that we have of people. So you're expecting the person to behave in one way or to treat you in one way, and they don't. But if there was a kama involved, you know, in that expectation, in their failing to do that creates a lot of irritation and anger. And so the thing is just to look at your own, if you look at the own times when you become irritable or angry, you know, especially in intimate relationships, because in intimate relationships we're always with that person, and so we have these expectations and these expectations, we want this and we want that. We don't even think about it like that. We don't think, well, it's not that I'm wanting something, but you are. We don't think I'm wanting something and this person is really letting me down, he's not or she is not behaving in the way, you know, that I need him or her to behave. I wanted them to behave like this. But you're not using words. You know, it's just kind of a given. And then we can feel really, really disappointed and really furious at that person. It can happen in all, the thing is like this. I don't want to tell you all your own, you have to make up your own examples, you know. But just when you have a krodha, when you are angry, when you feel angry and upset, you see what that krodha, what that anger, how it relates to your desire. And the relationship is to your desire is what you wanted, what you expected is not being fulfilled. And that can be irritating. If you don't care, there's no krodha, right? There's no anger. If you don't care. But if you do care, then that irritation, what Swamiji will say it, the kama, the desire transforms itself into anger, you know? It's not like, oh, there was kama there and now there's anger. It's the kama is transformed, transforming itself into that anger because it has been thwarted. So he says, so from that kama, krodha comes. Here, Shankara uses a really interesting example. And he says it in the... I'd have to read again to you in the Sanskrit, but he's kind of horrified by this, and that's why he uses the example. It's like, even in this situation, this can happen. And this is the situation. Even a sisha, the student, you know, who is wanting something from the guru, from the teacher. So there's this sisha, this guru-sisha relationship. The teacher and the student is a very sacred relationship. It's very formal also. You know, we don't, that type of formality that exists in India, we don't really have that there. It's a cultural formality. This is how we treat our parents. This is how we treat our gurus. The things are very highly defined. Even a sisha can even have krodha, have anger, and misspeak to their guru when this happens. Even that. That's how that's how strong it is. That's the idea. That's what can happen. Yeah. So and then he says, krodhat, from once this anger has taken place, krodhat, from that anger, bhavati sammoha. There is, then, once the anger has taken place, has overwhelmed you, then there's delusion. Sammoha. Means there's really nobody home. the person, that's a sammoha. It means total confusion, delusion. Sammoha. There's sammoha now. And that means that the anger itself is living through me. And so it is the anger that is speaking, the anger that is acting, the anger that is crying, you know. And there's no one there to stop it. Once you become overwhelmed by anger, the buddhi is though kicked out of the store, you know. The buddhi is overwhelmed. And so now the anger is the one that is in charge. And the blast just comes in whatever form your anger expresses itself, that's how it will be, that's what will be happening. So from the krodha, this the samoha comes, and from this delusion, he says, smriti vibramaha. Smriti vibramaha is what I was just talking about. Smriti is memory. There's a vibrama. There's like the brahma, the memory just wanders away. It's not even there. The memory of how I should behave. What is appropriate behavior? What is appropriate behavior to my guru? You know? Which is very highly, highly respectable. That's why I use that example. That's appropriate behavior. That's gone. With that moha, there's no recall of this appropriate behavior. There's no recall of dharma. There's just an expelling of pressure. The pressure of the krodha, of the anger. But then he says, smriti bramshaha, smriti bramshat. And when that memory is gone, he says, for me there's no dharma adharma. There's nothing. There's no buddhi there. There's no one who is constrained by appropriate behavior. For that person, there's buddhi nashaha. There's the destruction of the buddhi. The buddhi is destroyed at that time. The buddhi is just wiped out. So there's no one there to discern, to make appropriate decisions or to control the mind. There's nobody controlling there anymore. So there's destruction of the buddhi. And then he says, buddhi na shat pranashati. And when the buddhi is destroyed, the person is destroyed. Mm-hmm. Right? So, buddhi nashat, from the destruction of the buddhi, pranashyati, then the person itself perishes. Not permanently, hopefully, not permanently. But at that time, what makes you a human being isn't there. Right? All that there is this instinctual releasing of pressure. The human being, the one who has free will, the one who has choice, the one who is not just an instinctual expression, but what makes you a human being, that buddhi is not available. And so at that time, there is no human being there. There is just an instinctual expression of anger with nobody there to monitor it. So, that being the case, that being the bouncing ball down into destruction, then if you go back to the previous verse, you know, therefore how to control, you know, how to control these subtle likes, and what we call these subtle likes and dislikes, these raga dveshas that are triggered by this and by that, you know. So shravana, manana, and dhyasana, but then getting in the habit of sitting with myself. What we're doing in the contemplation, I've said a few times really, I'm just kind of emphasizing it, is that what we do in contemplation becomes how we are in life. Like now, for those of you who haven't done this for a long time, if you're sitting with the little ones inside, they need you to be there for quite some time. You know, there's a lot to say, there's a lot of feelings, there's a lot of pressure that wants to come out. Like sometimes it's kind of like a volcano of feelings and emotions that are being released because you're doing this work of coming into relationship with all of these things. Contemplation, doing contemplation on your raga dveshas, seeing who wants that inside, who wants it, what do you really want to get in, what do you really want to get out of it, so that you actually become a conscious being who is present to these kamas. They not just have a life of their own. You know, for most of us, I mean, you have a desire, you are the desire, that's what you're doing, you're going after the desire, and it's not getting work, so it's not getting fulfilled, and so you have pressure and tension and all these things. That's just living, you know. But it's not the same now, because we're taking back the projection of ananda. We're seeing through the illusion that you have experienced from beginningless time of fulfilling a desire to have a moment of happiness. The happiness goes and you still have the object of desire, you know. You see it over and over and over again, and finally, for whatever reason, for Bhagavan's grace, you start to really think about it. Like, what is going on? Who am I really? You know, how do I get anything lasting in a world that is continually changing? And why do you think that you might not have thought about that, you know, 100 million years ago? Well, it's not that obvious, because everybody else is just like you, you know. And so everybody else is bound and experiencing reality, this world, in the same way. I have desires, I fulfill them so that I can be happy. And when it doesn't work, I try to get something, I realize I need something else, or I need this also. So we have these riffs of behavior, you know, like a musical riff. We have riffs of behavior that everyone has, except for a very small few, who are jnanis. Otherwise, this is the way of the world. It's not like, you know, for you to start thinking differently, you're the one who's going upstream. You know, everybody else is just going downstream and they're all in it together. And you're saying, hey, wait a minute, you know. But it's not like you have a support system, you know. Until you have a sangha like this, you have a support system. But initially, there's no support system there. Everybody's going, they don't even know what you're talking about, because that has not occurred to them until it does, you know. And so I go against the grain when I have these kind of questions, the questions that a mumukshu has. So a mumukshu actually, especially in Kali Yuga, is considered to be so rare, very, very rare. The Kali Yuga is not meant for mumukshus. which is why Bhagavan says, any mumukshu that is born in Kali Yuga, I will do everything to support you. Yeah, I will do everything to support you. I will make it. You just chant Hari Rama, Hare Krishna. I will be there. I will be there to protect you. Because you're in such a minority. So it's considered to be a mumukshu. Well, of course, it's all our own karma that's having us be born at this particular time. But there's a blessing to it. And the blessing is the tremendous grace that's given to you in your pursuit of this knowledge. You would definitely get what you need. That's the promise of the Shastra. That's Bhagavan's promise. It says, in this Kali Yuga, this knowledge is not that hard to get. It's not that hard to get, you know, because it's not easy to get. It's not hard to get because it's not easy to get. And so Bhagavan makes it easier for us. You know, he gives us so much of what we need if we are a mumukshu. It's a really amazing thing, you know. But we have to... I think it's important for us to recognize how rare and what a blessing it is. Swamiji will go on and on about it, you know, that even the guru, the teacher, which is certainly Swamiji's case, and it's my case too, and I know it's Swami Vagishan in this case. You look on your mumukshas, your students, as very special people. You know, all people who, you know, want this knowledge. That is something very, very rare and very, very special. The Viveka Chudamani says it's for crores and crores of lifetimes and lifetimes of lifetimes of punya that allows you to take a human birth, to take this human birth with a mind that actually has viveka. That's also, you can have a mind and you can have an intelligent mind, but it's not any viveka. It doesn't occur that the ability to discriminate. You have the ability to discriminate, but not used. So to have that ability to discriminate and then to become a mumukshu and then to seek a teacher and then to gain this knowledge, this whole process is considered, it takes so many lifetimes of punya to get to a place where your mind asks this question. This is not a question that most people ask. Who am I? Why am I here? You've probably all been asking it since you were little, you know. That's because of that punya. That's because you're a mumukshu, you're born as a mumukshu in a sense. You're just there waiting. Either you're born into a family of jnanis, or Bhagavan's waiting for you to finish out a few karmas you need to finish, and then boom. You know, there's an initiatory process that takes place, and you're brought into this world of jnanam. And he will never, ever let you go. And especially in this era, it's something, a very sacred thing. So all teachers know it. That's why the mumukshus are always honored. And so you honor the teacher. The teacher is always honored. Versus the mumukshu is always honored. The mumukshu will also become a teacher. Not that you have to teach. You will be a teacher just because of who you are. And you don't even think you're anything. Swamiji doesn't think he's anything special. You know, we're all... He once told me, I don't feel anything. You know? I don't feel anything special. You know why you don't feel anything special? Because it's you. There's really nothing happening when you're gaining knowledge except you're dropping off all of this stuff that was a product of self-ignorance. So that's the stuff that never belonged to you is being dropped off. And you're just left as yourself without all of these problems that are stuck on you, that are not your nature. Everything about your nature is so beautiful. The Satchitananda, this is the nature of your being, is so beautiful. And what the dharmic qualities of your mind are innate. Compassion, love, care, sympathy, kindness, all of these qualities that we so admire in other people. That person is such a kind person. Person is such a patient person. What a beautiful person. He seems to care about everybody. We love those people because those qualities are the expression of the Atma, of yourself. So the mind for which that ajnanam is removed just naturally behaves that way, as you naturally behave when you're not suffering. When you're not suffering, this is how you behave. You know, it's very, very natural. And when you're behaving that way, then you feel fine, you feel good, it's beautiful, wonderful, you know. So knowledge rests very, very lightly because it's stripping off ignorance. It's not loading something on you, you know. Swamiji always said that too. This knowledge rests so lightly, and then when I start teaching, this ocean of wisdom, of knowledge comes out, you know. But when you're just sitting there, you're just being yourself, you know, and you don't notice anything special. You're just you. That's why it's not something stuck on you. And so you're just, as you're gaining knowledge, you're just becoming more and more yourself without the effects of ajnanam, of self-ignorance that has caused so much strife and pain and emotional hurts and all of those things. Those things are gone. And so you notice, you just are being yourself. And sometimes you notice as you're maturing, oh, I don't act that way anymore. You didn't notice it. And you're, when is the last time I acted that way? You don't notice it because it's gone. See what I mean? If it's gone, you don't notice it. And then you have some sort of awakening, some type of memory. Oh, I remember I used to react that way. I don't react that way. I don't feel that way anymore. When did that drop off? So you're always just left with yourself. And there could be nothing more simple and nothing more natural, but it's also nothing more beautiful, you know, than ananda, than fullness, than all of the dharmas and qualities that we so admire. We admire them because those are the natural expressions of the soul. So, Om Tat Sat. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.